I'm Lynn Neary, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. Michelle Martin is away. Coming up, the magazine mavens, editors of special interest magazines that target emerging multicultural audiences, join us to talk about what's in their latest issues. But first, America is expected to become more diverse by mid-century. While non-whites make up the nation's minority now, recent projections by the U.S. Census show minorities will become the majority population by the year 2042. Many ethnic groups have already formed large communities throughout the United States, often in cities, but some have also settled in rural areas where ethnic diversity is a newer phenomenon. For example, the Hmong from Southeast Asia have been moving to rural areas of Arkansas. Originally, the Hmong came to America as refugees after the Vietnam War and settled in the Midwest, mostly in urban centers. But many Hmong families have started migrating south to Arkansas, where they are buying farms and creating new communities. Here to tell us more is Dua Ta, Executive Director of the Southeast Asia Resource Action Center. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you.
So if you could remind us, Ms. Tor, who are the Hmong and how is it that they came to be in the United States?
Sure, Lynn. The Hmong are an ethnic minority from Laos, and the majority of them are in this country mostly because of their involvement with the CIA after the Vietnam War. Many were recruited on behalf of the United States, and when the U.S. retreated out of Vietnam and Southeast Asia, many came to the U.S. as refugees.
How old were you when you came to this country?
About 2 years old.
And where did you grow up?
We were resettled in Detroit, Michigan. So I grew up in Hamtramck, and then I grew up in Detroit most of my life, and then a little bit in the suburbs.
And there was a pretty big Hmong community there, presumably.
There was a sizable Hmong community. For a long time, it was the fourth or fifth largest population in the country, actually around 7,000.
So what started this migration to Arkansas, and why Arkansas?
I think that there's a mix of different things that happen at the same time, and in particular, you know, our families and our communities come from a very strong sense of being connected to land and farming. And I think part of my parents and their dream has always been to own land, even though they were resettled in an urban city. And at the time of when there was a move into the Arkansas area, which is about, you know, 7 to 10 years ago, the population, I think, found out through word of mouth that there was an opportunity to really own a lot of land at the same time have a business. And so many migrated because of that dream and the opportunity at that time.
I'm always fascinated by that word of mouth. Somebody had to have heard first that land was available in Arkansas. I mean, how people must have been looking, I presume, because they wanted to move to the country.
There's always an opportunity, or there's always the need to look for opportunities, right, to better their lives, to become more self-sufficient, to have economic prosperity. And the word of mouth piece is really important in our communities. Language access is really important. So the ability to read newspapers and to, you know, access articles in English and all of those things were difficult. And I think relying on family members and those who could see opportunities along the way is some of the best ways that people really embrace those.
So you had grown up by the time your parents decided to move to Arkansas.
Yes, I was already in college. And when they decided to move, it was also because my siblings and myself, we were much older, and they had an opportunity now. They didn't have to raise children anymore.
Well, we have your father on the phone now from Arkansas. Blia Seng is calling us from his farm outside Lincoln, Arkansas. Thanks so much for joining us.
Oh, thank you.
Tell me about why you decided to move to Arkansas. What was important to you about living in a rural area like Arkansas?
Well, at first, when I come to United States, we settled at Detroit, Michigan. At first, when I come, my sponsor put me on work in a hospital for 9 years, and I got laid off. Then I went to work for a factory. While we live in Laos, I'm also a farmer. And the reason we decide to move down here, because I'm getting old, and one reason is for the cold weather, and also I like to live in a country which is farmer, and
yeah.
That's why I moved down here.
Yeah. And how is it working out? Tell me about your farm. Is it working out?
Right now it's working okay. When I first come, like 5 years ago, I can make money, which is enough to run the farm and feed me and my family. For right now, it's a little bit tough because the gas is going up, and there's more no money raised from the company, so it's very tough right now.
Yeah, same for everybody around the country, I think, right now. Well, thanks so much for joining us, Mr. Singh.
Oh, thank you.
Leah Singh is a Hmong farmer, and he lives near Lincoln, Arkansas. And if you're just joining us, you're listening to Tell Me More from NPR News. And I'm speaking with Dua Tha, Executive Director of the Southeast Asia Resource Action Center. And with us now is Randall Barrett. He's the Superintendent of Schools in Gentry, Arkansas. Thanks so much for being with us, Mr. Barrett.
Thank you, and it's good to be with you today.
Tell me, how has your school system worked to accommodate this new population, the Hmong population that's moving into the area?
Well, we are a rural school district in northwest Arkansas, and for many years we were predominantly Caucasian. We had very limited ethnic diversity within our school district. The greatest non-white group at that time were Native Americans. We're very close to Oklahoma, and certainly there's a rich heritage there. And there was a little bit of rough spots there in the beginning, and I think any time that a new culture comes into your community, until we get to learn each other and to know each other, you always have some minor transitional problems. But we had some community meetings when that time was occurring at the beginning. And
when you say rough spots, let me just ask you what you mean by that. Tensions? Were there...
Yes, and there was some tension, and it certainly had nothing to do with the adult population, I don't think. And many of the old things that happened with us were things that just happened with young people, young adults.
They would fight with each other? Is that what you mean?
We did. We had some fights there at the beginning, primarily, I guess, between our Hmong population and some of our Hispanic students. We brought in, because we're quite serious about, you know, having a good educational program, and that certainly begins with safety. We brought in the National Crime Prevention Council, the Outreach New Americans program. I had community meetings, and we got those things worked out.
Let me turn to Dua Tha for a moment, because Dua, you grew up in Detroit, and I imagine there are some young people who are moving with their families from big urban centers like Detroit or Minneapolis. They're moving to this rural area. That has to be tough on this younger generation. What are some of the issues that these families are dealing with that you know about?
Yeah, so I think the population in Arkansas, the Hmong population, is a mixed population. There are first generation, like my father, who go to own farm and be much more connected to land. And then there is a wave of also second generation, many who are at the University of Arkansas in the school systems or working in industry there. So I think there is a mix. I mean, I think in general, the intergenerational issues are always a part of the issues within the community, as well as when you go down there, I think it's very important for both sides of the families to support each other. And I think that's why many young people do move with their family members and their parents. While they don't traditionally live with them anymore, they do support them often.
Did your parents face discrimination when they first moved to Arkansas that you know about?
My understanding is that they did face some discrimination also, because it is a very new area. Like, I'm sure that when many Southeast Asian refugees were resettled many years ago in the Twin Cities or in California, you had areas that were almost all Caucasian. And then all of a sudden you do have an influx of a new type of community. And I think there was very little understanding about the history or the commitment of our community to this country, and also that many had worked really hard to own farms and were there because they actually wanted to invest in those communities and that economy too.
Well, here's my question. Do you, an organization like yours, you go in after the people have already migrated to an area and start helping them? Is any groundwork ever laid beforehand for people moving into a new area?
There is a mix of different strategies. We're a national organization that does policy analysis as well as advocacy. And sometimes you can gauge where communities are going to move and you can prepare. In the cases like Arkansas, in many ways the communities are ahead of some of the work. So you never thought the poultry industry would be on the horizon for the community, and they actually already moved there. And so you do come in afterwards to support and try to offer as much help as you can.
And then, as we heard from Mr. Barrett, you have the established Caucasian community that's been there for many generations. You have another ethnic group like the Hispanics, and then this new ethnic group moves in, the Hmong. A lot of tension there, and for different reasons among the different groups.
many are well-intentioned, right? But the understanding of the idea that when the country is having a hard economy, when things are difficult, that maybe it's because of immigrants or it's because of these new diverse populations. But the truth is actually they add a lot of validity and they add a lot of support to the communities there. And it does take some time. And in particular, I think it takes a lot of leaders to really be able to pull individuals together and really spend some time talking through some of the difficult issues.
Mr. Barrett, I imagine more and more communities around the country may eventually be absorbing and welcoming new immigrant groups. So I'm wondering what you've really learned from your experience in Gentry that might be helpful to other communities.
I would say to a place where any new group, any different cultural type background moved in, make sure that you talk to each other from the beginning. Make sure that everyone has an understanding of each other's views, values, beliefs, commitments. One of the things that we did that I think helped some was we had a lady that teaches at our primary school, New Lee, that we got to translate our policy book, something so simple as policies, into the Hmong language and published it on our website. And it became a focal point, I think, a talking point, so that some of our non-English-speaking parents could actually be able to see our school rules and policies in their own language. And I think it was appreciated.
Great. Thanks so much for joining us, Mr. Barrett.
Thank you, ma'am.
Randall Barrett is the superintendent of schools in Gentry, Arkansas. And thanks also to Dua Ta for joining us. She is the executive director of the Southeast Asia Resource Action Center, and she joined us here in our Washington studio. Her father, Farmer Blia Seng, joined us by phone from his home in Arkansas. So good to have you with us.
Thank you very much.